This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Dan Hurley. You might not realize it, but you could be throwing away items that really can help your garden grow. Potato skins, carrot peels, peach pits, they all can be composted and turned back into soil. Today on Cincinnati Edition, we'll talk about composting and what you can do in your garden, even though winter doesn't want to leave us. Joining me to discuss all of this, author of Composting for a New Generation, Latest Techniques for the Bin and Beyond, Michelle Balls, Campbell County Extension Horticulture Agent, Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and co-overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Horticulture Extension Agent, David Kester. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And I will say that this is one of the most popular shows we have for phone calls. So if you really have an important question you want to get in, even if you have to stay on hold a few minutes, I would call early. 513-419-7100. Well, happy to have you all here today. Thanks so much for coming in. Sarah, I think we're going to start with you. You have this new composting book out. Somebody is interested in composting. Where do they begin?
Well, I think the best way to begin with composting is to start with leaves. So everybody has leaves. You can start with a really simple wire bin, which I give instructions for in the book. And
I just called you Sarah, so I apologize. Okay. You should have stopped me and said, Michelle, you met Michelle.
That's all right. No problem. So you start with, if you just start with leaves and then you add coffee grounds to it, I think that that is the best way to an introduction into composting.
Coffee grounds. I think I remember years ago people doing that. And, you know, I compost. I don't drink a lot of coffee, but I'd never think about putting the grounds in there. Why are they so good?
Coffee grounds are really high in nitrogen, and that's why they play so well with leaves, which are really high in carbon. So if you mix those two together, it's a really beautiful mix. I don't drink a lot of coffee either, and so I usually go to coffee shops and ask them if they have any spent coffee grounds, and they are happy to share them.
Well, let's talk a little bit more before we get into broader topics about composting. You can start out small, but if you want to do a little bit more, and you know, we do compost at our house, all that fruit waste and all of, you know, onion skins, all those sorts of things. We have a metal container on our counter. But when you go to build that bin outside or to get it all ready, what's the best kind to build and what do you do to keep animals out?
Very good question. So I think if you're wanting to build your own bin, there's plans in the book about how to build your own bin. You can also look them up online. You want to make sure that what you're building is at least 3 foot by 3 foot by 3 foot. You want it to be large enough that it's going to get that heat working up so that it decomposes. If you want to keep animals out, you want to make sure it has a locking lid. And that it is critter-proof, right? So if it has any little openings, there squirrels and other little creatures are going to get in there. So you want to build it so that nothing's going to get in there. If you just go and buy a compost bin at a store, that's easy too. A lot of places now sell them, hardware stores, home improvement stores. And they usually have locking lids with them. So you can usually
keep them out. Not necessary then for composting?
No, you don't have to have the sunlight. Now, you can put your compost bin in sun or shade. That's fine. If it's in the sun, it's going to heat up faster, but it'll also dry out faster. So it will decompose in the shade as well. What's most important is the moisture level. So you want it to be about as wet as a wrung-out sponge.
Tell us, so you should put water on it every once in a while?
If it's not rain in a while and it's dry and crispy, yes, you want to add some water to it.
So if it's covered, it's not going to get rain, right?
Right, exactly.
We have a covered one now. I don't think we've ever maybe my husband has. He pays better attention to that than I do. Let's talk about what can go in. What can you put in compost? Or maybe what you shouldn't put into.
Right. So the big things are leaves, yard trimmings, you know, any kind of weeds that you're pulling out. You can plant trimmings, that kind of thing. But you can also do all your fruit and vegetable scraps. So if you think of, you know, your banana peels, your apple cores, the peels that come off the onions, you know, the ends of things that you're not eating, all of that can be composted. The fruit and vegetables, the raw fruit and vegetable scraps are a good starter. Once you get that down, then you can move on to other foods that are plant-based that maybe have been cooked. So you want to get a little bit of experience before you start adding those because you want to make sure that you're burying those food scraps or they'll end up with an odor.
And what about things that shouldn't go in? Meat, I assume, is
right,
bad.
Right. Meat, dairy, any kind of food that has a lot of oil in it, you want to keep all of those out.
And I've heard limes are bad. Has anybody else heard that?
No, limes, you can compost any kind of citrus. You don't want to put too much. So say you had a lemonade stand and had fresh lemonade and had a bushel of, you know, lemon peels. That's going to change the pH of your bin. But just the regular amount of citrus that a family would compost, you can do. Now, if you're doing vermicomposting, the indoor worm bin, you want to keep the citrus peels out of there.
Okay. And that sounds a little creepy, at least to some people. Not creepy, Sarah, or it is creepy?
No, it's not creepy. In fact, it's really fun. It does not smell. Red wigglers are the special worms that you have to use. It's not just your backyard worms that you find or fishing worms. And so you have a bin, and I'm sure, Michelle, you have plans for that. Extension also has publications on that. And we have one right in our office in our, you know, and it's been there for, well, since I've been there for 3 years now, and they don't smell as long as you feed it, the appropriate food, keep them watered. We put paper scraps in there to keep the moisture, you know, and they reproduce quickly. So that's nice in the fact that you can share those.
Though? I mean, if you have those in your
not in our bin. I'm sure if possibly you made a homemade one, like out of Rubbermaid, and maybe you didn't follow the directions correctly, they might find their way out. But it's just a little worm, Marianne.
And they also, the worms do not like light.
Yeah.
So if you have them in the bin, that's where they're happy. They're not going to try to leave the bin unless there's something really wrong in the bin, like you put a bunch of citrus peels in there and it's too acidic for them.
Yeah, so even you don't want to put them outside because they don't like it. They're not native here. So if you're finished with it, don't think that they're going to thrive out in your vegetable garden because they do not like our summers and our winters here, so they'll just decompose, I guess.
Oh, my. Well, what about as far as turning the dirt and all those sorts of things? Mm-hmm. Is that important?
It is. So if you want to be a lazy composter and not turn your compost, you're usually okay. I've talked to people that just throw everything in there and then a year later harvest it and they're fine. If you want to speed up the compost and you also want to make sure that there's no odors, then you want to turn it about once a month. You can turn it as often as once a week. And you can do it a couple different ways. You can get out there with a pitchfork and really move the pile around. They make these products called like a wing digger, which is kind of a fancy metal stick that you poke around in there and get some air down in there. But you really, the idea is just to get air into the bottom of the pile that's getting compacted.
And one of the other things I'd like to point out, and we don't usually use that dirt much at home. We did it because we just didn't want to put a lot of natural things in the garbage. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. We move the bin around a lot, but we don't really do anything with the dirt. Do you have to use it, or can you just let it do its thing? Are we in wasteful?
I'll come get it. I'll get it.
You can bring it to my house.
You know,
Marianne, every year I make a ton of compost, and every year I run out. So, yeah, you need to use that in your pots. It's great
just
for
potting.
Straight?
You don't
Absolutely.
Have to mix it with anything?
Well, you might want to kind of put some perlite or something like that in it just for water drainage. But other than that, it should be pretty sterile because the weed seeds should be gone. And boy, by all means, use it. And even on top of your grass, it can be put down.
But it doesn't hurt if we just leave it. It won't just hurt anything.
Well, I always thought that the best thing for starting a new compost pile was old compost. Yeah. It really has all the things in it that get the compost pile cooking. So use it for that.
You can be an entrepreneur.
Selling our compost.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But
our phone
think
number.
It's an interesting topic is to inoculate your compost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just simply, you can buy compost starter, but just basically if you have existing good high quality compost, you know, add a, you know, the equivalent of a gallon milk jug at the beginning when you're building the bin.
A milk jug full of what?
Existing compost.
Existing compost.
Of your stuff.
Okay, good. Yeah, come to our house. Right. That's it. All right. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question, Jeffrey's calling from Northern Kentucky. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hello. I'm calling about a problem I've run into with maggots and flies developing in my compost. I use those green tubs, the circular ones, called EnviroCycle. And I'm very careful to mix in, you know, paper products as well as leaves as well as kitchen refuse. And every summer, about midway through, I get this awful infestation of maggots heaving about, creates a really foul odor, and all these flies are obviously generating there. And I don't know what I'm doing wrong, and I wonder if anybody on the panel has a solution to my rather unpleasant, odious problem.
Michelle?
Yes. So there's a couple things I think that you could be doing wrong or that you could do to remedy it. You want to make sure every time you add food scraps that you're burying those food scraps in a good amount of leaves. You want to add about 3 parts leaves to every 1 part food scrap that you're adding in there. So really pile on the food scraps. You should never look in your compost bin and see banana peels peeking up out at you. And once you bury those food scraps, especially fruit flies will not burrow down through there to get to the food. The other thing you can do is turn it more often. Now, and I'm guessing if you say that there's an odor, it's because you're not adding enough of the brown material, because the maggots themselves aren't the problem creating the odor. They're actually helping to break down your food scraps. So they're technically not a problem, except they're just a nuisance because you don't want to pick up your lid and have flies, you know, hitting you in the face. So you want to make sure that you're adding enough brown material and that you also turn it and it'll get hot enough that those flies are not going to want to be in there.
Oh, so are you putting meat or dairy in the pile?
No, I know not to do that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because that's often can be a tell.
Right.
Well, good luck. I hope one of these solutions works for you. Do you have anything else, Jeffrey?
No, thanks. I'm just very happy to hear about composting and delighted that you're doing the program.
Thanks so much for calling. Again, our number is 513-419-7100 if you have any questions. We did have someone call in and wanted to know, I guess they were too shy to go on the air, but wanted to know about eggshells and composting. And we do put a lot of eggshells in our compost, and they're still there. They seem to take a long time. But somebody did tell me you have to break them up. I tend to throw them in whole. Is that?
I crush them with my hand before I throw them in the bucket. You know, that's one thing.
And that takes care of it. And are they good for the compost pile?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Calcium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The smaller the material going in, the quicker it's going to decompose. So
helps. You could cut up your banana peels if you wanted to, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. those sorts of things.
You know, I'm thinking back to that question about the maggots again. And, you know, some of these, like the earth machines, these different plastic units that are fairly closed up, you know, they will hold a lot of moisture, even if you – and it's really important there to get a lot of carbon, dry, brown material in there. But because they're closed, even though it may not be raining for a while, there could be condensation on the inside. And so it becomes like this wet cycle in there and things become almost, you know, get really funky,
wet?
Basic.
Too
yeah,
wet.
Too much.
Yeah. So then just take the cover off for a little while?
That would be one recommendation if that gentleman's still having problems, is to take the cover off, you know, from when you know it's not going to rain, do that. Yeah. And if it's rodents or raccoons are a problem in the evening, you know, just take them off for a couple hours in the hottest part of the day, then close it back up at evening to keep the neighborhood cats out and dogs and raccoons.
And Sarah had a question for Michelle during the break, and I said, wait, we're going to ask on the show so everyone gets to hear the answer. So the question was?
Okay, Michelle, so what is the percentage of food scraps, yard waste that is going into our landfill? And also, if you know a percentage of, then how long that takes to biodegrade in our landfill?
Okay, very good question. So there was a study done back in 2012 that looked at loads of residential waste going to Rumkey Landfill in Corrine Township, and they found about 23% of what residents were throwing away could easily be composted in their backyard. So that includes yard trimmings, that includes, you know, food scraps, fruit and vegetable scraps that could have been easily mm-hmm. been composted. Posted. So those materials, when they go into the landfill, it's a very contained system. Some of it will start decomposing right away, but it's very contained. I've seen pictures of when they've done landfill coring, where they go down in and check a piece of the landfill that's, you know, 10 or 20 years old, where you can still see the banana peel in there. So they really don't decompose very much at all. And it really depends on where it is, what the conditions are. But there's some things that will be preserved in there for a very long time. And when the fruit and vegetable scraps decompose in the landfill, they are creating methane gas. And that gas at the Rumkey landfill, some of it will get captured eventually, and then some of it won't. So, and there's really no good percentage of that that's going to be captured. So that methane gas is 26 times more potent as a greenhouse gas than the carbon dioxide that would be created when you compost in your backyard.
Our phone number again, 513-419-7100. We go now to Gina. Hi, Gina. What's your question?
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. I have been trying to start composting for several years now, and it just continues to feel like such a daunting task, especially because I'm a mom of two young children, and something that I've been curious about is just doing one of those little bins, like you can even get on Amazon, in the kitchen, and then using a compostable bag to take it to a proper facility, and I know some cities even have places that will pick it up. But I have not been able to find anything like that in the Cincinnati area, and I was wondering if your guests might have any suggestions.
Ideas?
There is no facility to take compost to at this time, and there's, you know, through the organization Green Umbrella and other advocacy groups, they are trying to move forward on that. It's just a very complicated process to execute properly and to manage in terms of meeting EPA requirements.
Could Gina be like me and just put it in the backyard and not touch it?
That's the most direct and probably the best way to do it. And, you know, another thing about yard waste is that, you know, for instance, our ornamental grasses at home, when we cut them down, which I should have done a week or two ago, we just arrange them around in a circle around the base of the plant. And it's called chop and drop. And so there's in terms of dealing with a lot of trimmings and stuff on your plants and hedges and stuff, you can actually use that and then use it as a mulch. And it really doesn't look horrible or anything. Amy Strauss and her website and book, 10 Acre Farm, she offers a lot of tips that are based in the permaculture philosophy that are acclimated and sort of directed specifically to homeowners who live on small plots of land. So I really would recommend checking out her website.
But you're talking more about yard composting.
That's yard composting. Yeah, you don't want to put your leftover salad around your tomato plant.
Well, Gina, I'm sorry we weren't more help. Is Gina still there? Yeah. Anything else you had?
Nope, that was it. Thanks.
Thanks so much for your call. We go now to Jason. Hi, Jason. What's your question?
Hello. I've got a worm compost bin that I've had for a little over a year now, and I'm having a hard time getting enough compost out of them, or at least not enough that I read as I should. The bin itself is about 18 by 18 with different trays on top, and after about 17, 18 months, I don't even have enough compost to fill an 18-gallon bucket. So I was just wondering what I've done wrong.
So I have heard, I've never bought one of the fancy worm composters that you're talking about, but I've heard that some models work and some don't. Certainly the ones that we have, which I describe in the book, it's basically a Rubbermaid container that you, that the worms and everything, they're all in one compartment. And we definitely get finished compost out of that. And there's some ideas of how to harvest that compost. But I've heard, and especially there are schools that try to do those, fancy worm wigwams and those kinds of things. And some of the models work and some of them don't. So it may just that you have one that, I mean, there's got to be vermicompost somewhere in that system, right? I mean, but I just don't, without knowing what kind of model you have, it's hard to say.
And I know that the one that we have at our office, it is a commercial vermicomposter. We get more compost tea out of it than the actual compost.
What's that?
And that's just another byproduct of the liquid part of all the fecal matter and the – it's good, Marianne.
Okay.
sorry. And of all the
– Well, what do you do with that? What do you do with this
It's tea? Fertilizer. So it's high nutrient liquid fertilizer.
Jason, are you getting liquid or are you getting nothing? Jason? Jason, still there?
I'm not getting any tea, but I'm getting, you know, a little bit of compost, but again, not as much as I thought. My wife thinks maybe I should take it out and walk them.
Well, you could possibly need more worms. I don't know what the density is. But another thing to remember about vermicompost is that it's high octane. So I don't know if you're harvesting, you know, how many gallons or buckets you're getting, but you do want to use it more sparingly than you would your regular yard compost, where your yard compost, one of the big things is that you're looking for bulk organic matter to help break up and loosen our heavy clay soils. Vermiculture is, I almost think of it more like a fertilizer. Correct me if I'm off base here, but you want to use it more sparingly. And even though you might not have enough, you have gold.
Yeah, you know, it's a really precious commodity. Product. It really is. Yeah.
I wouldn't stop doing it. You may just want to either look at Michelle's book or reach out to one of our publications to make sure that you have the appropriate amount of materials in there, just like you would a backyard compost.
Jason, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our number 513-419-7100. We go now to Aaron. Hi, Aaron.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question?
I'm wondering, I have some knockout rose bushes that are like huge, and I need to get them trimmed up. I was wondering if you guys can give me some direction about when to do it and how to do it.
Do it right now and take as, honestly, I think you can take as much as you want to off of them. This is a good time to do it. 10, 12 inches, if you want to go back that far, you can certainly do that. They'll generate new growth. But by all means, cut them back now. And they will compost those, but not the friendliest things to have in a compost pile. They will break down, but they're kind of waxy, and those thorns will stay intact for a good while.
And the good thing about knockouts and pruning is they bloom both on new wood and old wood. So unlike some of the other, you know, I call high maintenance roses, you might prune them twice a year if you need to keep them in a certain form or something.
Yeah, another thing about the knockout roses too, and a lot of these your perennials, is that if lower branches are starting to scrape the ground or drop down to the ground, I would limb them up a little bit, because even though knockout roses are really resilient, there are some sort of bacterial issues that are cropping up from time to time, even with those. So if you get some light and air underneath the plant, it's always a good idea.
Aaron, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100. We got an email from James who is suggesting contacting local breweries and asking for spent grain to use in your compost. Is that a good idea?
It is a very high nitrogen material. You just want to make sure, again, you balance that really heavy, wet material with something like leaves or shredded paper so that you don't get too much moisture.
So the shredded paper, we've been putting that in the recycle bin. We could put that in the compost bin?
Yes.
All paper?
You want to stick – newspaper is really the best. I mean, if you have glossy paper, it will break down, but it won't break down that well. But if you can recycle it, that's great too. I don't usually add shredded paper to my bin unless I'm completely out of leaves and need that material.
Yeah. The one paper you don't want to put in is something that's waxed, and I mean like a heavy wax coating. That would be the one thing, is that's a paraffin, a petroleum product, and it's, you know, designed to keep the paper from rotting. And so,
but in the summer when you may not have as many leaves, if you shred up newspaper, that would work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of the brewer's grains are actually picked up by farmers and fed to their livestock. It's you know, very high in protein, and so a lot of times it's recycled that way.
I think that if you wanted to get brewer's grains, if you know anybody who homebrews, talk to them. You probably have a better option, because like Dave says, I think that probably all the breweries, it's all sewed up.
Already
people are picking it
people
up.
People have their names on that already. 513-419-7100. We go to Amy. Hi, Amy. What's your question?
Hi. I have been composting for years and years, my vegetables and stuff. What I'm wondering is, what is the most ecological way for me to get rid of my dog's poop? I know it cannot go into a compost pile that you're going to someday use for vegetables. What should I be doing with it? Because unfortunately, it's a lot.
You can flush dog poop down the toilet, and it will, you know, be taken care of just like everything else that goes down the toilet. But you're right. You do not want to put that into your compost bin.
It can be buried. And I think, you know, if you're in a section of your yard that you're not going to be harvesting anything edible from, flowers, certainly there, that wouldn't be an issue to put it in there, let it decompose numbers of years and do bury it fairly deeply.
But this is a good time to maybe talk about using animal manures. because people know, I mean, feline and canine generally is, you know, off target because there's pathogens they carry. But some people have access to people who have horses to get horse manure from the stalls, which also will have a lot of wood chips or different bedding straw in it. And the thing that you want to remember there is you don't want to be, even when you're handling it, you know, wash your hands afterwards. I mean, there is active bacteria in there. It's not all bad. But also, you want to at least have that horse manure or cow manure, which is sort of, for me, the gold standard. You would want to let that compost for at least a year just to be safe. But it's an excellent way if you have a whole lot of leaves and carbon branches and things you want to break up in your compost pile. I mean, to add some horse manure, cow manure, or sheep, goat is a really great way.
What about deer? We have a lot of deer in our neighborhood. I don't know. What do you do?
You can pick up those little balls, you can put them in your compost. Yeah, that's fine.
The only thing about that, you know, what they're eating, I don't know how they're also, they're designed to also spread seeds. So you may be spreading some weed seed that you don't want.
You know, Marian, I'm amazed. Any garden center or grocery store you go by right now, there are just pallets and pallets of soil amendments, peat moss, topsoil, all those kind of things for sale. And by far, compost is superior to all of them. And it's something that you can get for free. And I mean, any truck you see on the highway, 1 out of 10 of them is hauling some sort of a soil material that is not as good as compost that you can make yourself.
All right. And the bag soils, too, is that I've tried at least a dozen, if not more. And I've only found one product, which I'm not allowed to mention products on the air, so I won't, that is actually good. And it's basically, it's made up of cow manure and peat. But the other ones, even though they're OMRI approved, there's all these sort of touted, all these benefits, when you put it on the soil, when we've top-dressed beds with it, you know, after it's rained a couple times, I'm always amazed at how many undecomposed wood chips and stone and gravel and sand that is mixed into these. And it's not on the ingredient list.
So the topsoil or whatever that I buy to put in the flower plants, I should go back to the compost bin instead. It'd be better.
Much better.
I think it's much better. Now, your potting soil that you buy specifically for pots, that's a different animal than what they call garden soil. You know, a lot of times that is like vermiculite.
Potting mix is what you're looking for.
Amy, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. 513-419-7100. We go now to Dave. Dave, what's your question?
Yes, I guess following up with this cow manure question, not so much for compost, but I want to put directly right onto the into the garden itself. So I'm just wondering, is there such as too much? Should the cow manure be aged or should it be fresh? If so, do I need a calcium for the pH level?
If it's fresh, it needs to go on 120 days before planting. Mm-hmm. And so in the fall of the year, you'd be fine if you put it on that way. I think it's better if you can put it on after it's been composted. And generally, you don't need to use any amendments with that. It should be just fine as is. Calcium should be plentiful in that material. So I don't think you really need to amend it at all.
And if you're not Peter.
No, go ahead.
If you're not sure of what your nutrient level is, just like your native soil, you can get your compost soil tested. And in Northern Kentucky, we do offer soil testing. So just know that as well. So if you do need to amend your soil, at least you have a starting point.
And what we've done too is if you have a larger garden, like we have a one garden section that's 12 rows that are around 26 feet long. And so what I do is I build a compost pile windrow on one of those rows. And this year we did work in cow manure into that, and I'm just going to let it sit for 6 months, and I'll turn it in place and then scoot it over to the next row next year to grow into. And so that's the way you get around the 120 days at least. But yeah, you definitely want to let that cow manure age, but I believe it to be the best.
Thanks so much for your call, Dave. We appreciate it. We did get another call. Someone, Joe, called in and said there is a compost pickup organization north of Dayton called Project Zero. So I guess if you are in the Dayton area, north of Dayton, you may want to check in to that. Have any of you heard of that one?
No.
I've heard of a company called Go Zero. So that might be the Maybe same one. Yeah.
We go now to Mary. Mary, what's your question?
This is me.
Mary?
I was wondering if you had any comments on lasagna gardening.
Lasagna gardening. What is that, folks?
Well, it's sheet composting.
Yes, it's a layered composting right on the ground. And I just found out about it. I wanted to try it. The magic is they tell me I'll be ready to plant things within 3 to 4 months. So I was wondering if you'd had any information on that.
Peter, can you explain a little bit more about how you do that?
Yeah, well, basically lasagna, the way you make lasagna, you put down some sauce, you put down noodles, you put down vegetables, you put down noodles, meat, so you're layering things up. And that's the same kind of thing. There's variations of it. One is called a Hügelkultur, German techniques, where you actually dig a hole and fill it. But the sheet mulching technique or lasagna gardening, there's actually a book out about it titled that, is that, but you're not using fresh vegetable scraps. You know, you're using mature compost, and then you're layering different materials on top of it. They can be in different levels or different grades of decomposition, but you're not really putting in. Now, some people will put fairly fresh cow manure or horse manure as the first base and then build on top of it. Then after, like what Dave said, 120 days, you can start going on top of it. So you can mix some green animal manure if, in fact, you're going to wait. It's a good technique. I've used it in a number of different variations, including a variation where we use flakes of straw. Mm-hmm. It's a very smart way and very economical way to build a vegetable garden.
Okay. A lot of people with clay soils will do that on the top of it, and they'll actually layer it pretty high and plant into that material. And then as it decomposes over the years, you end up with a really nice cemented soil.
Mary, thanks so much for telling us about it. We appreciate it.
You know, another thing about these sheet composting, you have a lot of your organic matter then on top of your clay soil. So at one point before, you know, maybe the next year, not the first year, we would do something that kind of crawled on top like vining squash. And then the next year in the spring, we would plant potatoes and let the potatoes grow. Then when you dig the potatoes, you're actually tilling the soil in a way when you dig the potatoes, and you're mixing your clay into your organic matter and you need a good balanced mix. That's a really fun technique. Beans are another good first crop.
Another person emailed and asked about, we had said, you know, you were talking about dog waste. What about corn-based used cat litter? Can you do anything with that?
I would not put that in my backyard compost bin just because, like Peter said, it can have pathogens in it, and you want to be really careful because you might be using that finished compost in a vegetable garden.
Also, we want to go now to Marianne, who has a question. Hi, Marianne. What's your question?
I was wondering about the no-till gardening that they've been talking about. If you have planted a cover crop and now you want to start to plant your regular garden, what does that need to get tilled under? Because it says no-till. Or do you just put a cover of compost over the top of that? And how deep would that need to be?
Okay. It depends on what the cover crop is. For instance, winter rye is a little bit more persistent, and you let that grow till right before it forms seed heads, and then you chop it back and turn it into your garden. And you pretty much have to use a tiller for that. So that, if you want to do no-till, winter rye is probably the wrong crop. However, the crops I really like are these things called cocktail mixes, which have a number of different herbaceous and have some grasses and daikon, radish, and different things into it. And it actually winter kills. So it dies to a mat at the end of the season. And if you have that dead mat of plant material, you can actually just plant directly into it. You could top dress over it, or you can lightly turn it into the soil. And I would just try turning that into the top 2 inches so that you don't mess up the substructure of the soil. Another crop is hairy vetch, and you would let that grow till it flowers. And when it's 90% flowers, what I do with it is I cut it off at a stubble right at the top of the ground level, and I roll it back almost like rolling up a carpet, and let that sit beside the bed and dry out. And I do that around after Mother's Day or after the first frost, May 18th. And then I plant my tomatoes, peppers, any transplants that you want could be put in there. And then after that mass of green material is dried out, I roll it back onto the bed and use that as the first layer of mulch for the season. And the hairy vetch is a legume, so you want to leave those roots in the ground because that those nitrogen nodules will be feeding the soil. What I was curious what she did plant.
What did you plant, Marianne?
I didn't. But I would like to start to do that. I didn't do anything this past year, but hearing about it, I thought maybe I would try to do that. But with the space I have right now, I guess I would just weed and then top dress with.
Yes.
And how, when you say top dress, what is the depth of that you should put down?
I don't want to be the only one that answers questions.
2 to 3 inches, depending. If it's compost, 2 to 3 inches would be fine. And you don't have to till that. You can also use something like a broad fork or a spading fork, not really bringing the soil all the way up, but just kind of loosening it. And if you haven't walked on that soil and it's not compacted, you know, a lot of times we just over-prepare these gardens and till them too much, and you might be able just to get away with just planting right into that.
Thanks for your call, Marianne. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And if someone wants, I have a handout that we do as part of the community garden program. If you email at me at peter@turnerfarm.org, I will be more than happy to send a PDF of that file to you, which it describes the different characteristics of several different cover crops.
Caroline, what's your question today, Caroline?
Hi. I have one of those round bins that sits on rollers for my compost. I've never used it before. I just started in November. I put some horse manure in there. I put some leaves in there. I put all my kitchen scraps in there. But it's just a big, wet ball. Like, how do I know when it's done, and should I be drying it out more?
Yeah, you're when you're using a tumbler, it usually takes a little bit more maintenance, and that's one of the biggest downfalls is that usually it gets too wet. So you want to make sure you're adding some dry material in there. Every time you add food scraps, add a good handful of leaves, preferably shredded leaves, because if you're using a tumbler, it's going to finish composting really quickly. But you need to balance that out. If you can, if you reach in there, and you can use a gloved hand, if you reach in there and squeeze the compost and you can actually see water dripping out, then it's way too wet. You need to get in there and mix in some brown material, and then it will finish composting.
Thanks for your call, Caroline. We appreciate it. We go now to Joanne. Hi, Joanne. What's your question?
Well, it's not a question, but I had heard that eggshells are good for getting rid of slugs in the garden. Is that true?
Yeah, I wonder if it's because when they break up, they have sharp edges, so the slugs don't want to go across them. It'd be like using diatomaceous earth, which is tiny, broken up, microscopic seashells, which have a tendency will kill
but
crawling insects.
Don't throw them in their hole. You want to make little pieces out of them.
I would think that. I can't say for certain. That comes to mind.
That's what I've heard, is that the slugs, when they go across the eggshells, it hurts their little bellies, and so they'll avoid it, yeah.
Joanne, thanks for the idea. We appreciate it. Teresa, what's your question? Teresa?
Hi there. I'm further out in the country. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. What's your question?
Well, I'm embarrassed. I'm not an experienced gardener, and so this may seem very naive, but you're talking about how great compost material is, and I live in the woods, and if I want to start gardening, I thought, well, I can just dig the dirt right out of the woods. It's pretty much,
David, you're shaking your head there. Tell us why that's not a good idea.
Well, one, you're going to, if it's in the woods, you're going to run into roots very quickly. Your forest trees are very shallow rooted, and they're eating up that compost. Anything that the leaves that fall in the woods are very quickly utilized. They decomposed, and the trees will take that away. And I think you're going to find that, a lot of times we think that forest soil is very rich, and it's really prairie soils that have more organic matter in them. And I think you'd be better finding another source for that. For the soil that you want to use in a compost or to start your garden in, I think I would go outside your forested area.
And if you live out in the country, I mean, sometimes other farmers will have spoiled hay. that they can't use anymore.
What's spoiled hay?
Well, it's just gotten wet and funky, okay. And maybe it's starting to have fungus or mold growing in it or mushrooms, which is basically the beginnings of compost. So we, whenever I can, we usually can scrounge up 10 to maybe 30, 40 bales of spoiled hay from different places every year, and we utilize that a lot. It works good. But also, just think about advanced training in composting. It just came to mind, the Civic Garden Center for 20 years have been doing the master composting training. So you might want to go to civicgardencenter.org and look into when their classes are scheduled. I'm not sure when that is, but it's a really good series.
And I also just want to mention, too, about composting when we do grass clippings. So just be very mindful if you spray your lawn with any type of fertilizer or herbicide in particular, just be mindful. I strongly would not use those grass clippings to put in your compost, especially with herbicide, because there could potentially be a residual. So just be very mindful of that.
Yeah. Teresa, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it.
And following up on the lawn grasses is that, remember, a mulching mower really just...
Yes, exactly.
Save yourself the trouble of emptying a basket.
Yeah.
You know, just mulch and let it drop.
And then also on that as well, if you have a really horrible outbreak of a disease or an insect population on anything, trees or vegetables, you may want to think about not putting those in the compost because sometimes, I in particular do not get my compost pile up to that 140 degree recommended heat, so our temperature. So, you know, sometimes, you know, especially my cucurbits, I can't, you know, downy mildew, I do not want those be sitting in my compost pile. So I'll just trash them.
Yeah, with the vegetable gardening too, we really haven't talked so much about weed seed. You know,
yes.
It's always best to pull your weeds before they go to seed. And if you're not going to get around to pulling them, at least go by and cut off the seed heads before, or the cut them back off, at top them off before they form blooms. And that'll make a big difference.
Judy, what's your question? Judy.
Hi. I compost different than the rest of you. I save all my scraps in bags in the freezer. And then I go out and dig holes. I'm wondering if by freezing those scraps, if it affects the nutrients in any way.
Michelle?
No. So I have a whole chapter in the book about integrating composting into your garden, and it includes a sheet composting, includes pit or trench composting, which is kind of what you're describing. A lot of people will freeze their food scraps, especially, believe it or not, in the wintertime. They don't want to have to walk out to the compost bin every day because it's cold. And so they'll store it in the freezer and then bring it out, and it's perfectly fine. It will take a little bit to thaw, but actually the freeze-thaw in food scraps will help start breaking that down. So it's perfectly fine to put it stored in the freezer.
Judy, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to Becky. Becky, what's your question?
Hi. Not a question. It's a comment regarding the eggshells. We had family down in Louisiana, and they had chickens and goats and all that type of thing. And she would save her eggshells and then bake them in the oven. And they would, after being baked, they would crush easily, and they fed them to the chickens for the calcium. But I was thinking possibly if it wasn't too much trouble to bake them, and since they could be crushed so easily, that maybe that would be a good way to add them to the compost.
Should you bake them first, folks? What do you think?
Well, I'm one of those people that'll eat raw cookie dough, so baking it doesn't really seem necessary to me. But I have heard of people doing that. I've heard of people putting them in a blender and blending them up until they're like a powder, or using an old coffee grounder. You will see eggshells in your finished compost if you don't do that and you add eggshells to it. So if the eggshells really bother you, the look of them in the finished compost, then you can do things like that, grind them up into really tiny pieces.
Becky, thanks for your call. We appreciate it.
Cheryl, when you talked about trench composting, the Bhutanese refugee population I work with use that as a technique a lot. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because it's not something American gardeners are really that familiar with.
Yeah, it is a technique that's used around the world. I talk about a couple different ideas, and one that I think would work really well is if you've got a garden bed, you can use it's called the English method, where you have your garden rows, and then in between your garden rows you have your trenches for your composting, and you can either cover those up with cardboard or newspaper and walk on them, or you can have a third row that's actually your walking row, and then you rotate those throughout the year. So then the next year you'd be planting, you know, in another row and moving those back and forth, kind of like Peter was talking about, where you're moving your compost, will help improve the garden soil in your bed. And the nice thing about trench composting is that you really don't have to harvest the compost, right? Because it's already right there in the ground. So it's a great way to amend your soil without too much work, except you do have to get out there with a shovel and dig the trench, right?
And you need a bigger space to do that. You can't do that in a small. That would take a bigger yard, I assume.
Yeah, that's true. You can do pit composting, which is similar to trench, except you're just basically digging a pit. And I've heard of people that live in areas where there's a homeowners association that doesn't allow them to compost. They'll kind of compost secretly by digging pits and composting that way.
We go now to Lee. Lee, what's your question?
Hey, has any studies been made or research done in regards to, you know, the vegetables that we buy? If you're not buying organic and you're getting all the pesticides and you don't know if they're GMO, and how would that affect a compost pile if you...
Do you worry about that fertilizer in the compost pile, Michelle?
I don't, unless you are really worried about wanting to have your finished compost be completely organic, then you're probably buying organic fruits and vegetables to start. And hopefully you're washing your fruits and vegetables before you eat them anyway, so your scraps would likely not have a lot on there. The only you really want to watch out for those persistent pesticides. Those are the things that so anything that you'd be putting on your ground that would be a persistent pesticide, that's what you want to look at.
Thanks for your call, Lee. We are nearly out of time, and we never got to the part about how winter hasn't ended. Quickly, in 30 seconds, can you do anything yet, or is it too soon with all these freezes? David?
You should have already been doing a few things. Onions, peas, things like that. I think even broccoli and cabbage plants would have been okay in this. But boy, I think this is going to be a big weekend for us. Everything should come together, and hopefully we're not going to be below freezing after this.
Thank you all for being here. I certainly appreciate it. We've been talking about gardening and composting today. My guests were author of Composting for a New Generation, Latest Techniques for the Bin and Beyond, Michelle Balls, Campbell County Extension Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Director of the Turner Farm Community Garden Program and Co-Overseer of Home Meadow Song Farm, Peter Huttinger, and Boone County Extension Agent David Kester. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeyer, Assistant Producer Selena Reeder. Today's Technical Director was Josh Elstro. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Dan Hurley.